Hello, this is Ryan Slawinski. I just wanted to come in before we started this episode to give you all a massive content warning. We will be discussing rape, sexual abuse, PTSD, and torture in this episode.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Rachel. Spent 7 months in a Klingon prison. How are you?
Disappointed.
Disappointed you didn't get to say it?
Yes.
Hi, Rachel. I am doing very well. We are back. Yum, yum.
I didn't even have to ask you how you were.
Spent 7 months in a Klingon prison. How do you think I'm feeling? So we're back at it again. Yum, yum.
You're feeling great.
I'm feeling pretty great.
Because you know how to pry open an access panel.
With a knife.
Yeah, it took you 7 years.
It took 7 months. Thank you. 7 months. Thank you.
There are seven lights.
There are seven? No. With a Yum Yum podcast, likingly because of the iconic line of dialogue from Star Trek Discovery, Yum Yum. We're finally entering that, if I can be so bold, we're finally entering the era
boldly
of...
Going.
Boldly going. Finally entering the era of Star Trek Discovery in which lines of dialogue like Yum Yum are far more prevalent. Maybe it's just me, but we're back here again. We're doing our rewatch of Star Trek Discovery. So this is our second time watching it. The first time, obviously, was when it aired. Rachel?
Yes.
What is the episode we are watching and talking about for this one?
Into the forest I go.
Where? Where in the forest?
I don't know. Stamets has some line about a forest.
He sees it. It's a clearing.
Like, there's something about the clearing and them being
they travel through
in
it. They travel through the clearing. It's a reference for season two. But Rachel...
Is it?
Yes. When they go to the Marsupial Network and they describe it like it's a ecosystem. But that's for that episode. What a great episode that one is. It didn't make me mad. Rachel...
I remember it vividly.
What's the plot of this episode?
Well, IMDb describes it thusly. Bypassing Starfleet... orders, Lorca uses the USS Discovery's crew's ultimate asset, the ship itself, in an effort to end the war with the Klingons once and for all. That was all one sentence.
I said that last week as all one sentence. You didn't believe me. I agree. That's the description of the episode. Although I would have made the episode far, like if I had to describe the episode, I would have described it far more in line with that they have to board the ship. Like, that was the far more thrilling part of that of this episode. Whether we enjoyed it or not, that was the thrilling part that you would want to, like, talk about, not the Lorca uses the ship itself. That was the less interesting part. I thought this episode was an episode of Star Trek Discovery. It is finally at this stage in which this...
This is what it wants to be.
No, this is what it is going to be.
That too.
This type of episode is what we were talking about early on when we were saying we didn't really care for Star Trek Discovery, where it's going to go. We're constantly saying throughout each episode, it's going to get rid of these things or it's going to go for this specific style. And this episode is kind of the one where I will say the whole episode is that. There have been telltale signs of it. It's not just like randomly one day the show just flipped dramatically like it does.
No.
It's a slow...
It's a pivot.
It's a slow slide down the hill. And we've finally gotten to that point where I go, this episode was melodramatic. The other episodes I've been holding off saying that. I really have. I've been holding off saying that.
No,
but this episode
you think
was...
That this is the melodrama?
No. This is the one where you go... This episode is where it's, like, this is a full episode of it. The other episodes have had melodramatic moments, but this episode as a whole, I thought it was melodramatic.
Okay, so what exactly do you mean by melodrama?
We said it when we were watching the episode. The music itself is very grandiose, over the top.
And telling you how to feel.
Informing of the scene. And it's so over the top and grandiose that it falls beyond just being dramatic, but being melodramatic, in which it is so heightened, so over the top, so bombastic, so in your face that it falls into melodrama. And that also unfortunately falls into a lot of other aspects of this episode. The action sequences fell into melodrama by the fact that we had them so frequently, and the reasons we had them were so forced that it just fell into...
What do you mean? It makes complete sense that the Ship of the Dead took 2 minutes to explode.
That kind of stuff. And the acting fell into a lot of melodrama. My first piece of critique for the episode was we fell into the melodrama from the very beginning of this episode, which is we have an intense close-up of the Vulcan Admiral guy as a hologram. Mm-hmm. And I was immediately like, whoa, 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 back up. Back up. That's really close. Like, why? I could see his paws.
Yeah, we don't need an extreme close-up.
Of a hologram.
Oh, yeah.
It was weird.
It's like, and also just because in the last couple of days, with some teaching stuff, I've been looking at what camera angles and shots are and why you choose certain shots. And it's just like, the most basic reason to choose an extreme close-up in particular...
Yeah.
Or it was somewhere between an extreme close-up and just a regular close-up. It just...
Yeah, I think it's a regular one, but it felt extreme because of the cut from wide exterior shot to close-up. And, like,
and it's just like, one of the main reasons to show that is to show the emotion of a character. So just without context, getting a close-up of a Vulcan who is expressionless...
But he is saying sternly, you need to do your fucking job.
Yeah. So it's just odd because it's just like...
It's not like it does... It does work,
It would make more sense because we're meant to connect what he's saying to Lorca. So it would make more sense to have a wide where they're both in view.
Yeah.
Or like Lorca's facing the camera but not the hologram, so he's giving us a clear expression of what he's actually feeling and the frustration against his orders. Like that would have developed the feeling of the scene more than being like, whoa,
Vulcan
face, Vulcan in my face.
I agree, but not fully. I do think that what they did could work. It's throughout this show we've talked about. There's been a lot of moments where you, the audience, go, "Whoa, that was a weird choice." Mm-hmm. That not technically wrong, but just a weird choice. But my issue
like you pointed out, it has to do with the flow of those shots.
Yes,
and like, all of these things can work, but in the context and the purpose of that scene, it doesn't serve.
For us personally, it just didn't work. But what our opinion. What I had an issue with the Vulcan scene is, and again, I know Vulcans talk like this, but this is a systemic issue that this episode has and what this show will fall into. He talks in that dramatic voice, and this isn't just in Star Trek Discovery.
I will give my orders.
This isn't a lot of movies and TV shows in which they feel the need to give a scene dramatic heft. They have to talk like this. I am being very serious right now. What I am saying is very stern and very serious. Hello, I am Michael Burnham. I need to be on that ship, Lorca, for I am a tactical and I know that's how Vulcans can talk.
Yeah,
but it's not just the Vulcans this episode.
Like that
it
process.
Is the Klingons. It is the humans. It is how a lot of the characters spoke in this episode. And this is what I mean by melodrama. Just down to the vocal performance. The vocal performance is hindering the physical one as well, because you see in this episode, Michael, the actress who plays Michael, you see her physically posturing to deliver this line, and all I'm seeing is the performer, not the character.
But the cloak has small imperfections, so what appears like background EM radiation actually contains near imperceptible shifts that correlate to the cloak's gravitational field.
There was a funny moment when Sonequa were filming, and she had a lot of like space techno babble speak, and she did it in such a rhythm that it sounded like she was like rapping Busta Rhymes, because it was like it was like the computer was got it, but and it was just like one of those weird, and she just couldn't stop laughing after the, so we just couldn't get through the scene. It took a long time because you just kept thinking of Busta Rhymes for ages.
It's a clear marker for where it's gonna go and what it's trying to do, But just out of my own curiosity, was the scene that you were thinking of when you were describing Burnham acting, was it when she was convincing Lorca to let her go on the mission? Because that's the one that really stood out for me.
There's three scenes I can think of. Lorca, her and Ash, her and Ash Tyler on the Klingon ship, that whole back and forth. I could just see her posturing, and the one where she's talking to the Klingon captain guy, General Cole. Now, that one, I'll give it a bit of a defense because she's trying to put on this bravado, but I still notice the actress performing, not the character. And that may be because in other scenes, I've noticed this issue where it didn't fall into place. So even in a scene where it does work, unfortunately, due to preceding events, it feels false.
So usually you have the process, like I'm also thinking of stage because that's more of what you've done in the process that I'm familiar with. But I imagine that
someone who's studied acting
fairly similar with television. Like you have an ongoing process, but it still feels like they didn't get to that stage where they got to live and express the scenes, because everything just it doesn't feel quite comfortable and lived in this episode, and because it just feels like okay, that like they've just done the blocking of the scene and they're like I can see them thinking about what they're doing and
not just the characters being
I feel like I am seeing the actors acting, and I place that on the fact that they haven't had enough time to prepare and time to be familiar with it.
Yeah.
And the point where I really got angry at it, because I was like, there is the production timeline, I can see it litting down this scene, which is the fight choreography.
Between her and Cole?
Because, oh my God, that bad. Oh, like, I was just like, okay, like, she's clearly paused there because they're about to change shots. Like they didn't do a flow because like she can't do the next move until they've reset the cameras and it's over there and she hasn't been told to do anything, so she just chops him in the leg and then
he's fine.
They just keep standing there, and then like they move around, but they're not fighting because we don't get the close up because that's the wide shot. So they're not actually doing anything while the wide shot is being filmed because they've only choreographed the shots that are for the close ups or for the medium shots. So like you can see that they don't even have the bat lifts on them in the white shot
or whatever. I think they're just using hand blades or whatever in that particular scene. But
they're not using full bat lifts because that would be cool.
Why
would he be hanging off his belt?
If we can talk about the fight scene some more, I didn't even notice that because the editing's so quick and so jarring. But what I just noticed is,
It
looked like it was a rehearsal, but my thing was, constantly throughout the scene, I know the idea is she's distracting the Klingon guy. Yeah. I get that. But my biggest issue was, how is Michael Burnham now like this expert fighter who can withstand a Klingon fight long enough to distract for 5 whole minutes? That doesn't feel accurate. That's what I was thinking of. I go, okay, the first time they rocked up, it was a surprise ambush. Those guys were wounded. Those guys had just had their ship blown up.
Yeah,
and they still fucking failed. This guy is a fully healthy, fully conscious. They've had a conversation. He's a badass. Like,
no sense.
And you just go, because they need this to happen. They need to show Michael Burnham's awesome, which... other Star Trek, we've had these things of these awesome characters, but here's the thing. Characters like Kirk, characters like Riker, characters even like Chakotay.
Yeah.
You believe that these people would get into fist fights and bar fights and all of this, right? You can believe that they would have a little action scene, even against a Klingon, even against a monster, but you know who you don't believe in doing it?
but Burnham isn't set up that way. And
no,
it's not...
and it's not because she's a woman.
Yeah, that was...
Because there's also badass women characters that can do this too. Like, I believe B'Elanna from Voyager could do it. I believe Janeway could sustain... Oh, no, she's a small woman, but she could at least throw a couple of punches
spry,
in before she gets her ass kicked.
Yeah,
but
she
like,
would
I...
do her darndest.
And you know who wouldn't sustain themselves in a... Fight Harry Kim. He sucks. So there's guys too, but there's just certain characters
Paris
that...
Paris would figure out a good place to hide.
Picard. You don't see him sustaining in a physical fight like that. And that's the thing.
No,
there are certain characters, the way they're portrayed, not even just the actor themselves, because I believe this actress could do all this, but I do not believe that Michael Burnham, the character, can do this outside of the fact that the show tells us she's just awesome and that's enough. I do not believe her xenoanthropologist background and quantum mechanics background warrants her being a physical badass as much as the show wants. Oh, but Ryan, she jogs on the ship. That shows us that she's physically active. If they showed us more scenes of her doing fight training or doing something like B'Elanna does in Voyager, where she's got a holodeck program and she's fighting and whatnot, I would buy it more. Maybe her and Ash, maybe if they had scenes of him teaching her how to fight a Klingon because he knows how to fight them.
Yeah.
Right? That's a whole thing that she was fascinated by, but we don't get that.
No.
Instead, it's just like, she's important to every single facet we need for the story. In this episode, she knows about quantum mechanics. In this episode, she knows how to fight a Klingon. Yes, our Star Trek characters in the past are geniuses and experts at every single field ever, but there's also the times where you just have to go, even with those, you just go, look, Tom Paris, you're great at everything, and that can kind of be annoying. But that was what I thought during the fight was, oh, of course she can defeat this guy, or of course she can stand her own against this guy, because she's Michael Burnham. She's like, how tall is she anyway? Like you just go, no.
And of course the Klingon just says yes.
Well,
even
honor.
Though, but...
Well,
does
well, guy who doesn't have any, he really wants to show he has them.
Yeah, like, he's...
an idiot.
He's more intrigued by her attempts to dishonor him, I think. But it...
And also, if he kills her, then he gets to be supreme leader, which he already is. So.
Yeah, like, he has nothing to lose by saying no and just... knocking her down.
We do, but he would lose something. A fight scene. He would not have a fight scene. And we need to have this guy have a fight scene to show that he's been badass. Because he hasn't had a fight scene.
No.
He's just been standing around going,
I loved fighting with Kenneth because it... You know, the Klingon style is just so brutal.
Yeah.
And so what I had to do, and I gotta shout out, you know, Chris and Hubert, our stunt coordinator and fight choreographer, because it was, they're just always phenomenal, but it has to be just evasion.
Yeah.
You know, as a human female and as a Klingon male, you know, it's just a lot of it is evasion. And so you see a lot of swooping and you know, and Kenneth and I were just down in there.
What do you think? Do you think that this is the first full episode, or do you think we've had others before, or do you think that this doesn't fall fully into it like I do? What's your views on it? Because you and I have been very different. When I set out to do this podcast with you, I thought, I'm going to be the one ranting and raving, and you're going to be the one who's devil's advocate, because that's how we are in real life. But on the pod, you're like, this motherfucking show, you called that a great episode of TV? Are you serious? You fucking nerd. You want good Star Trek? This isn't going to be that, Ryan, you fucking idiot. And you should give up on dreams. You know where the show goes. And I thought...
You should let us stop watching this trash instead of making us watch it over again.
And, over and over. Back and to the left. Back and to the left. But what do you think about the melodrama aspect of it? Because I think it was episode 6, we pinpointed that's when they started doing the, we've got to talk fast, we've got to edit fast, we've got to spin the camera fast.
Yeah, like the plot was always on fast forward. But now more other things are being added into that fast forward section. Like that was basically what I was saying. Like we can see that the production is on fast forward now by the fact that nothing feels well rehearsed and lived in. It still feels blocky in ways. I don't know. I find it, my understanding of melodrama
is different than what you described as melodrama. But if I use that definition of it being like more than just dramatic, it's being like reinforced and overdone.
Yeah.
Then yes. But I think of, I just think soap opera when I think melodrama. I have that
melodrama
connection.
Yeah, there's lots of good meanings to it, like with all genre type things and that. Melodrama, when I think of it, is it's high emotion, high emotion over, you know, over the top emotion, and that's kind of what this episode fell into. It was a lot of over the top emotion. Oh, Ash is having PTSD. Everyone's crying all the time. Saru and Michael give each other this knowing, sternful look. But when you actually think about it, why were they giving each other that knowing, sternful look? Like, what was that about? Like, I know what you could say it's about, but in turn of the episode, in the actual episode, why were they doing that? Other than we, the audience, know for melodramatic reasons that, oh, we've closed the chapter on that part of the story where we had the Giorgio stuff, and somehow Saru was like, yep. Maybe if he saw the badge, maybe.
That would make more sense, but
she destroyed that ship that killed Giorgio. Oh.
Yeah, like, she's redeemed herself now.
Even though she's already done that?
For, like, Saru not to feel like she's a threat, I guess?
I don't know.
It's hard because a part of what I think of melodrama being is that it is just telling you so hard with everything how to feel in response to a scene.
Didn't this episode do that?
But I do agree that more of this episode is that, but I don't think all of it is yet. I feel like there were just a few moments of reprieve where it wasn't all in your face. Like, I feel like
even with the music,
I hated the score for this episode,
but that was reinforcing. It was telling you emotionally how to feel. It was manipulating you. It was constantly in your face. Every 4 minutes we would get a Lorca speech to tell us how we were supposed to feel in the episode. There were 6 Lorca speeches in this fucking episode. I like Lorca, but Christ.
Lorca really likes to do the shipwide announcements, and I'm kind of here for it.
I get what they're doing.
He knows how to give a grand speech. And I'm
but it's
like
a crutch of the writers.
Oh, yeah, yes. Okay, so basically, I see this as a melodrama 9.95. Because I know that they just have that little bit more.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not saying that this is the full amount. I'm saying this is the first episode thus far in which I go, now this is the Star Trek Discovery that we interpret, that we know the show to be.
Yeah.
This is the one that I point to and go, this is the episode that I go, oh, this is what I don't like about it. The constant Dutch angles, the lens flares, the camera constantly moving in a scene in which characters are talking because they're afraid that we don't understand. All these things have been here before, but this episode has them all in, and the dialogue is very, very on the nose, and the acting is just, these are good actors. All of these people are good actors. They've shown it in their other works, and they've shown it in other episodes, but this episode in particular, everyone speaks like this. Everyone's posturing. Everyone's grimacing or smiling or saying, I love you. And the music swells and they have enough of a pause and a mournful look on their face so that they have the music swell in. That stuff's false.
You get to live your life. But you deserve to. Not at war. But at peace.
I found peace. Right here.
We know that it's slowly been building back to this, because this is what we remembered more of it being.
And we didn't even remember season one being like this necessarily. When we talked about season one earlier and in our memories, it was more the bad stuff was, fuck yeah, science. Like that
corny. It is fucking cool.
That corny stuff that felt like they needed to try hard and, you know, Klingons being boring. But and, this is a systemic issue that people think, if they don't like season two, which we didn't, they think, oh, when Alex Kurtzman took over, that's when this stuff happened. And it's like, no, this stuff's been slowly building from the beginning of the show. And in this episode, for me, in episode 9 of season 1, this is the blueprint. This is the structure. This is the style that it takes from here on out. No more Harry Mudd episodes. No more Lethe episodes. No more of the one that we watched last week. I mean, even though that one I found boring, that episode at least was a boring away mission. We're not going to get that again. No. Not really. I know we get our one where they're on the monk, the church, the planet with the church on it. And
yeah,
but there's that. This feels like this is the episode that they went, oh, this is the show. We're going to do this for the rest of it. And this is what I think of.
Yeah, I really do agree that this feels like it's the blueprint for how they went forward.
And so this is why I go, you know, I can't say that I hated this episode, but it is just, this is Star Trek Discovery. Now, this is Star Trek Discovery. The other episodes that we've talked about, we've had ups and downs and in-betweens, but overall, we've been constantly saying, it will become a different show. It will become a certain type of show. Here it is.
Yeah, part of the credit that especially I have been giving it is that I know that it gets worse. And I think
and this
part of my hesitation to call it full melodrama is that.
Yeah.
Because I know once they get to the start to fully explore the mirror universe in particular, they have no reservations and they don't go back from that.
But at the same time in My Recollection, the mirrorverse stuff was fun.
Oh, yeah.
But then they come back.
I can see them all. Infinite permutations. It's magnificent.
Paul!
Can we talk about the Klingons?
Okay.
One of the fascinating things that I have about the Klingons is this season I remembered, oh, that's the Klingon War. And the Klingon War was very dreary and very depressing and very dull and boring and not interesting.
Yeah. And
it is so fascinating to me now that the Klingon War in this season, outside of the pilot episodes, with the two beginning episodes where we had the Klingons start the war. Mm-hmm. Okay. Since then, we've had three encounters that matter, and they didn't even matter. So we had the one in which they stopped those Klingons from destroying that base on that planet, mm-hmm. and Lorca came in and shot them all. Then last episode, we had the skirmish at the beginning that we entered halfway through, and they're like the cloaking things that an inconvenience. And then this episode is they've basically ended the conflict. I know that once they come back from the Mirrorverse, the Klingons have fucked up shit.
It's the deciding factor. It's like, okay, this is the real turning point for the war, is that they get the upper hand against.
And it's so weird that, like, I know this is a war, and I know wars don't have to go on for eons of time, but it is so funny to me that the great Klingon War that they've been parading this whole season has been happening off-screen a lot, and then we've only encountered it really three major times outside of those first two episodes, and then it's wrapped up by the end of this first season, and it's so amusing that this episode is the one where our heroes get the big upper hand, because when we get to the one where they plant the bomb in Kronos, that's a whole different kettle of fish. We'll get to that. But this episode is we took down the antagonist, you know?
Yeah, Cole is
the
dead.
Antagonist, and he's dead, and the great ship of the dead, it's dead. And it's just Cole. So funny to me that in my brain, I thought the Klingons had a bigger, wide-ranged impact to this season of the show. But they don't. Mm-mm. They're just kind of things that were there, which is so funny to me. I just can't wrap my brain around. They pitched, okay, this is a show we're going to have the Klingon War. Oh, yeah, how are we going to do it? don't have the Klingons in it very much. Oh, so what are you going to replace it with?
Nothing.
Nothing.
When Lorca says that there are trillions of lives at stake, I was just like, that's... I know that the show thinks that that's true.
But we don't feel it as an audience.
No, because we...
I felt it with the Dominion War in DS9.
We've seen crews and ships be destroyed, but there is no attachment there. And there's no even physical weight because it's CGI nonsense.
Shooty, shooty, computer that they don't, noises, yeah.
Oh, yeah, literal computer noises last episode. Michael hasn't lost anything since the first episode.
No, not and from the Klingons either.
She's perfect at everything. And her flaw was that she was too perfect.
Oh, but she will lose something because Ash Tyler's a secret Klingon asshole. That's the secret mystery box that they really ruin in this episode because they clearly show us what the fuck's going on. But then they treat it like, you didn't notice that though, did you? And I'm like, but I did notice. And I remember saying that at the time. I'm like, oh, so they are 100% confirming he's a secret Klingon. And then they're going to wait to reveal that still. And I still find it fucking amusing that in this episode, I thought, oh, it's exactly how I remembered it the first time, where it's so obvious, and yet they're going to still wait to parade it around for us later. Like, boo, it's a big twist. It's not a twist if you tell us directly beforehand, several episodes earlier, and then treat it like it's a twist for the audience. It can still be a twist for the characters that we know something they don't know, but the show still treats it like, hey, it's a twist.
Brian, stop paying attention.
We're not
meant to piece it together. We're not that smart. The audience is dumb.
You fight like a Klingon, and you're tall, and all that. Yeah, it's just the Klingons. They're here. They don't do anything. They're monster people that growl. It's odd because the Klingons are supposed to be an antagonistic force. They're supposed to be an obstacle and a threat for our heroes. But at the same time, they're kind of like a tertiary object that's just there. Like, you never feel like they're a threat. You never feel worried. You never feel like they're going to get the upper hand or be intelligent or outdo our heroes or figure out something or catch them off guard. Then yeah, Ash gets PTSD and he gets left behind, but do you ever feel like there's any threat to him and the Admiral or to Michael being on her own? No.
Okay.
You never do because they're not a threat.
How much of that is that it's a prequel? Because I don't think any of it is.
I don't think it's because it's a prequel. I think it's because...
I think it's because it's poorly written.
I don't even think it's necessarily just poorly written. I just think... we have not grown any real attachment to the Klingons being a threat. These Klingons are just, they're monster people that go, rawr, rawr, and we know that they torture people, but we don't actually feel the danger.
We are told that they are winning the war.
Yeah.
And the Federation is very disheartened because people say that.
But we don't see how brutal and evil they truly are as people.
We don't see the impact on any individual because we only see what's happening with the Discovery.
Yeah, which is cool
Which could work. But the way that I think that other shows and other Star Trek shows more specifically would have approached the situation like this is if... somebody was worried about a family member or a friend. Like, showing that at least, like, somebody in the crew having connections beyond the people on the ship. Because the way that they've set it up makes the Discovery feel so insular. But they keep on saying, well... the Discovery is only one part of this.
Yeah.
They are one thing and they're really important, but the whole war is happening. but we don't actually get shown or even attempted to be interested, intrigued, or value anything that's happening in the world.
Yep.
And I think that that is a part of why it doesn't feel Star Trek-y.
I think
because it doesn't feel like this ship is part of a Federation.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're a secret ship. That's secret. Shh. Rachel, the Klingons, one of the things too is, okay, maybe as a whole race, they don't need to, like, them just being, like, off to the side, being evil is fine. We don't need to reinforce that. What you do need, though, is to flesh out your antagonistic figure that is a representation of them or representative of them with Cole. Mm-hmm. But we don't really get anything about his character. We get that he's a bit self-serving, but that's seen as an oddity from the Klingons. You get the great thing of this in other Star Treks where you get, say, the Romulans are represented by certain Romulan characters. And then sometimes you meet other Romulan characters that aren't the same. And you go, oh, I've been painting them with a broad brush.
Like,
for instance, in the DS9, you have Gul Dukat. Mm-hmm. Gul Dukat is a fascinating, complex, interesting villain. And he is a point of view of the bad guys. He's like the head bad guy. He's working with the Cardassians. He's working with these guys. Whatever you feel about all the others, you can at least go, I fucking hate Gul Dukat. Or even you feel sorry for him, or you feel conflicted, you feel something. But in this, you go, what would Cole do that's evil? And how does he justify it other than I want power and that's it? Like, in DS9, fucking Gul Dukat will blow up a sun to get what he needs.
Yeah.
In this, what Cole is just a guy. Okay. He's just a guy that's like, yes, I will fight you because the script needs me to.
If that proto-matter device had gone off inside the sun, well, the death toll would have been enormous.
And your daughter would have been one of the casualties.
Zial made her choice. As far as I'm concerned, she is no longer my daughter.
You know, Dukat, I thought you'd changed in the last 5 years. I see I was wrong.
One man's villain is another man's hero, Captain. You should see the monument they're erecting in my honor at the gateway to the Imperial Plaza.
Is that why you sold out your people to the Dominion? For a monument?
What I did to make Cardassia strong again. And mark my words, Captain, I succeeded.
Oh, and Laurel. Oh, what about Laurel? Mm-hmm. Ash Tyler's traumatized because Laurel, she's our bad guy. Excuse me. No, she's not, because secretly she's actually a good guy, because actually, no, she's not evil. Ash is, in fact, Vokh, and so even her, someone who we should fear, is actually secretly a good person, even though I don't believe that. But she's mother, and she's going to be good. And she doesn't have a villain redemption arc. She's just been secretly all right the whole time. And so someone like her, who we see Ash Tyler freaking out, you go, what about him? No, you can't do that in the rewatch because we know that's not real. That's a fake memory. That's a perception that isn't accurate.
Yeah.
And so you can't even go, well, Ash Tyler.
The memory is real. The context isn't.
Fake.
Yeah.
The context is perceived incorrectly.
Yeah.
So we're left with Klingons in this episode, but also the episode doesn't want to have Klingons because they want to have them walking around the hallways. And okay. I like the idea of the episode, which is let's board the Klingon ship, plant stuff in there, dodge Klingons, find out secrets, find the Admiral, and then we can fuck them up.
It could work, but it doesn't. Again.
I didn't hate it, though. This episode didn't make me angry. It was just, I was disappointed. Because I just was noticing the music's informing me, the acting's a bit weird. What was with the makeup, too? I don't know if you noticed this, but everyone was, especially Michael, was very orange.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, I don't know if it's just that they couldn't figure out for this episode what complexion to do with certain actors. Like, not everyone was orange, but Michael in particular was very orange this episode, even before she got on the orange-lit ship.
Yeah.
But Something about the makeup was off. Like, even Saru's makeup was a little bit different, and that's fine because he's constantly, they're constantly tweaking his, like we said in the early season, the early episodes, that he was very pale.
Yeah, there wasn't enough definition in his
color
head, and head divots as well in that particular episode. So, I'm sure that this is a deliberate decision, but I also don't really get it, which is why they always make them so sweaty when they're on the Klingon ship.
Well, yeah, well, they do like show
dripping.
They show that they have internal heating in there because we see a shot in which we see the heat waves coming off the floor of the ship. And I guess Klingons are reptiles because they have scales and they must need heat because they're lizards, I guess, is what they think. Am I wrong? Maybe that's the reason. Yeah, maybe they think they're reptiles.
I guess, like, I was completely open to there being a genuine reason.
I think it's that they think
that...
I think
that's about as fucking dumb as I thought it was. I think the writers
think that they're reptiles.
Yeah.
Because they have scales and they have fucking, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Laurel's bedroom and she has just a giant heat rock on there and she just, like, spreads out. Fucking bitches, Cardassians are the lizards, idiots.
Yes.
Fucking dum-dums, the ones with the spoons on their faces.
So when I got to designing, and again, these were supposedly cold people. So I used a lizard as in my inspiration for it. Hence the way the nose came down. There was an upper lip. There was a little chin piece coming out of the ear here, down the jawline. There was a lizard-like thing.
I did appreciate that this episode didn't have so many stories spinning on so many plates. It seemed fairly simple. Get on ship, get thing done, blow them up, mission accomplished. You had obviously some narrative threads that are going to run through. You had some narrative threads like Lorca's secret plan. Paul is connected to that. Hugh's connected to that. Michael's connected to that. Like, all that's... it was fine in this episode.
It wasn't trying to do anything thematic.
And it wasn't overbearing.
No.
In that regard. In the, how many plots are happening right now? And I wish they would focus on this one. In this episode, it focused on what it needed to, which was get on the Klingon ship and fuck them up.
There is another thing that we need to discuss about the Klingons.
Mm.
You gonna make me say it?
Yeah.
Why are you gonna make me say it? Is it because I have them?
Yeah.
Klingon titties. And Klingon nipples.
As a child, I always wanted to see Klingon titties. When I saw those boob windows on Lursa and Betor, I wanted Klingon titties. And finally, Star Trek Discovery, the show for a new enlightened age, a show that says we're here for representation, a show that says we're woke, a show that says we love strong female characters, a show that says we are the next generation of Star Trek, has finally delivered onto us Star Trek's greatest need, nipples and titties. And not just any titties, but those of a Klingon. Klingon titties for you, young children. You're not going to be like Ryan. You're not going to be like the children of the 1960s wanting to see nipples and not being able to. You finally get to see Klingon titties. Huzzah! So, Lorca, I really enjoyed his plot in the episode in which he gave 15 speeches. What else do we have to say about Klingon titties? I mean, why did they put them in here? And it's just really funny. Like, what I just said, it is funny, isn't it? Like, there's no reaction I can give to it other than it's really funny that this show that there parades itself around as
where
this
woke
show...
There's no discussion necessary. We just needed to say that they did it.
They did it.
They did it. There's no necessary...
Because they can. We can say fuck it now. We can show you titties. We can show you sex. Because we're an adult show. We're really grand. And is it wrong for Star Trek to have these things? No, of course not. You can have these things. But Star Trek Discovery presents
it could be done well.
Star Trek Discovery presents it often than not.
In our opinion.
It's like the intense close-up at the beginning. Could be done well, but more often than not, you get thrown off going, whoa, okay, we're presenting this now. The big problem with the titties in this episode is...
titties?
The ending of this episode's fucking garbage, because there comes a point where you go, and that's the end now. But no, we have to have the other five endings. When Michael and Ash had a really mature conversation where they had appropriate melodrama, sometimes melodrama can be appropriate because they're talking about something very intense. He's crying, she's crying.
And it's been building,
and it's a very mature conversation to be had, and I will talk about my issues with that, but it's a mature conversation to be had. They hug, they embrace, and it's really sweet and tender, and we leave on a high note, and they pan out, and it's like, that's the end. No, it's not. We've got to have the Lorca stuff. We've got to have the Hugh stuff. We've got to have the Paul stuff. I thought it was going to end before that scene
with the two of them. I thought it was going to end on the bridge with it blowing up. And then I was just like, wait, it hasn't been long enough.
And I remembered...
there's going to be more to this.
And I remembered that they had to do the flip to the alternative universe in this episode. But
yeah.
And that's... Star Trek Discovery has done this a couple of times, not too often, but there are points where you go, and end the episode here. But no, we got to keep going because we got to have all the... It's like the Lethe episode where you go, and end it here, and then it's like, no, we've got more. And sometimes more is less, and less is more. And this episode, I felt like they needed to end it there, but no, we've got to set up the alternative universe stuff. We've got to do this, we've got to do that, we've got to have this, we've got to have that. And all that stuff is... It's necessary, but it also feels like leftovers. Mm-hmm. It felt like we're not okay, this is the part now, the epilogue, in which we now have to serve the overarching series plot instead of what was happening within the episode. And it was manipulative, and it really undercut the scene with Ash Tyler. Because that was a good, like, I wouldn't say a good scene, but good in theory in terms of what the conversation was and how they were handling it as performers and as writers. And then you just have to go on more and more and more. And that's kind of it. And then what's after that? We have to see Ash Tyler again having a PTSD flashback of him being what is presented to us as rape. We see Klingon titties. Did we need to see that, or was the mature conversation in which it wasn't explicitly said, but it was in the subtext, wasn't that enough? No, it wasn't enough, evidently, because the writers and the show creators, well, subtext is for fucking losers. We've got to put it in as text. We've got to say fuck. We've got to show you titties. None of that.
We have to show you it.
We have to show you it because you're dumb and you won't pick up on it.
I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards.
It's bothered me from the beginning that Ash Tyler is a secret Klingon man. It's fine that he is, but what isn't fine to me, especially now in the rewatch, is Ash Tyler as a character, the human Ash Tyler that we get to know, a lot of his character has been engineered to be that of a victim of torture, a soldier, a prisoner of war, and a part of that this episode explores and the previous episodes have hinted at and these future episodes will explore even further is that not only is he a victim of torture, but he's also a victim of sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. Since we're talking about this, if you're not comfortable with talking about rape and sexual abuse stuff, feel free to skip past or skip this episode from here on out, because Star Trek is dealing with this. Star Trek Discovery is dealing with this issue with Ash Tyler. They're dealing with it by not only just having a character who is a victim of rape, but a male character who's a victim of rape from a female character, which is still something that has a large stigma around it, whether in media or whether in real life. It still has a stigma around it of that classic, oh, well, he's a guy, he should get over it, he shouldn't have had that happen. And in this show, it's like, oh, well, she's a big Klingon lady, whatever. A part of that story is to ingratiate us, the audience, into feeling care and sympathy for the character of Ash Tyler and for the characters, Michael Burnham, to feel sympathy and care for Ash Tyler. There's a lot more complexities to it, but that is one of the main reasons for putting it in there as a writer, is we need to give Ash Tyler some form of character tragedy that that we understand, and thus we relate, or thus we feel sympathy or care for this character. And same for the characters in the show. For Michael in particular, because she's the one that has an attraction towards him and has the deepest relationship with him.
Yes.
Great. Star Trek hasn't always been the best with dealing with rape and sexual abuse stuff, but when it has tried to do it, it at least has tried to do it. But it could have always done it in a better way. So in this show, I was really thrilled and interested, and I felt like, okay, a lot of problems I have with the show are big, but I felt like, wow, they're tackling a really big and mature subject. Yeah, they're using the framework of sci-fi of, like, you know, the, oh, he was a Klingon war prisoner and that's all sci-fi. But at the core of it, they're exploring the interesting aspect of, well, what if we had a character who had ongoing trauma from being a victim of not just torture, but of rape. He's a rape survivor.
Yeah, and the idea of he's conflicting emotions with that.
Because he feels like he chose it to survive, which he, you know.
He feels that not only was he just complicit in his own assault, but he pursued it.
And encouraged it and grew it. And that is a really, truly deep and mature thing that the show explores. It's uncomfortable, and it's a lot, but the fact that the show wants to touch upon something like that is commendable, and I commend it. What I do not commend and what I do not like is the fact that in a few episodes time they pull the rug out from the audience and say, no, here's a secret Klingon. And those memories and those experiences and those feelings of being raped are actually false, because that was consensual sex, because he is in fact Vok and he loves Laurel and they were having sex, and Klingons are rough during sex and all of that. And he's a surgical whatever. Those memories and that emotional complexity of him being a rape survivor is in fact false. Fucking cowards. From the writers. That is fucking cowardly, because at the end of the day, all of this maturity that we experience in that conversation is false. Mm-hmm. He's wrong about those feelings. That's what it tells you, is, oh, well, when you watch it, that's not actually what happened. So all of those feelings that he's feeling aren't real. They're false. They're not right. They're incorrect, because at the end of the day, that didn't happen.
Ryan.
And what does that say?
It says that rape victims are lying.
No, it's not even that it's it necessarily that. It's just does. Like, it's, well, it, for me, it's not even saying that rape victims are lies. It's saying we, the writers, are okay with dangling rape and sexual abuse and all the complexities of that as a tool of manipulation in our writing.
Yeah.
That's what it feels more to me. Less so with rape victims are lies, more that we the writers are perfectly okay with using this very touchy topic, this very sensitive topic, one that not only is it sensitive because it's rape, but we even double it with it's a male character who's been raped by a woman, which we already know has a stigma towards it, and has already been, like, in media, hasn't been handled very well, and whatever. Mm-hmm. Not only are we going to do that, but then we're going to say, hey, it's a lie, and we just did it so that you, the audience, can feel a gut punch later. Dude, the gut punch was that. When I think of Ash Tyler, all I think of is a liar. I don't care about his character in season 2. I don't care about his character at all. I don't find him that interesting. But this was an interesting idea. This was an interesting and mature idea. Star Trek should always be tackling these tough topics in a mature fashion, or even a campy fashion, but something like this is not something that I associate Star Trek exploring heavily. So it was really eye-opening to see it. And at the end of the day, it's a lie. It was there for the writers to manipulate us, the audience, and the characters within the show, but more importantly, us, the audience, to have feelings for this character. It wasn't there to have a mature dialogue. It wasn't there to explore a very sensitive topic. It was there to manipulate us, the audience, for feeling for a character. So that way, when they do their dramatic twist that he's a secret bad guy, it's more dramatic. Fucking cow. I said this to my co-host of my other podcast. I said it's fucking evil, in all honesty. Because it infuriates me so fucking much that the show wants to wave its hands in the air and go, we're really mature. We've got these gay characters that we don't do anything with. We've got these strong female characters and we think strong female...
this episode,
they
Ryan.
Love each other. We've got these strong female characters and we think strong female characters means boring and all of that. And then they wave their hands in the air with all these other things and this is still in the modern Star Trek. I'm still disappointed in old school Star Trek when they fuck up on these things, but there's always that thing of, well, it was the 90s, or well, it was the 60s. It's disappointing to say...
This was 2017, right?
Well, it was 2017.
That was 3 years ago.
It's disappointing.
Recording.
It's disappointing
Come
that
on.
We can still fuck up like this, because this isn't
we
just...
We weren't woke back then.
I just... And from this point on, like, I don't have any care for Ash Tyler. Like, no. I didn't care for him, but, like, how can I care for him? I don't give a shit about their romance. I don't give a shit about any of that. And this twist lie and this scene in this episode, it falls false on the rewatch because you just know it's a fucking lie.
Yeah.
You know it's just the writers manipulating the audience. The writers say in this show... We're okay with using rape as a tool of manipulation. Not as a road of discussion, a road of thought, or anything constructive. We're okay with doing it to fuck with your emotions as an audience member. Nothing else. And hasn't rape been used enough like that in shows?
Yeah.
And movies?
It does feel like an evil power move on behalf of the writers for them to use it in this way, because they could have used it, well, in a way that was interesting and in a way that gives representation to an idea that is often negated or just not explored or explored poorly in media.
Yeah.
They could have done that.
Yeah.
But they choose not to. And it's not like they could have... They could have changed it.
It's presented as rape. And that is a bold move in itself. Mm-hmm. Hey, the audience, we're going to show you on-screen rape. Is a bold power move in itself.
Yep. And then we are going to say, no, actually, he remembered it wrong. He's been thinking that he's a sexual assault victim. He's not actually. He got it wrong. He didn't remember the details right, which is...
His emotions are wrong about it, actually, because he got the details wrong.
Destructive message. And is an example of the way that, like, we've made fun of the writers not caring and not thinking about things. But this has such a visceral power that it really does feel evil.
We can... Hey, guys. Our lead character is a black woman. Mm-hmm. We've got all the women are powerful ladies. We've got gay characters. So we've earned our brownie points so that we can do this rape story incorrectly, right? We've earned our brownie points so that we can do a bury your gays earnestly, right? Like, that's how it does feel. It does feel
and
like...
And then press the undo button.
And then press
really
the undo
hard.
Button. But it does feel like... Well, guys, look at all the brownie points we've earned. That means we can still, like, do this shit, right? Motherfuckers, it doesn't mean that you can still do this shit.
Look
I mean, you can, evidently, but it doesn't mean that it's good or it works or that it isn't tired and hackneyed or reinforcing certain ideas that are tired and old and backwards and reductive. It's
atrocious. And, like, it...
As bad as season 2 is, It never goes anywhere like this. And I'll give it that. Like, this is the big stain of season one, is the fact that it introduces this idea and backpedals on it. Mm-hmm. Out of all the things, like, I'm furious about all of it, but just from a basic viewing standpoint, I fucking hate that they waste our time with, we're introducing this, nah, backpedal. It feels like they wanted to do it, but then they didn't actually... We could go on for ages about it, but do you want to do the Huda? Because what can one say? It's time for the Huda! I hear the Huda! Yay! The Huda. Like, I'm furious, but I like, what else can we say about Ash Tyler stuff other than it's fucking disappointing and it's fucking disgusting and it is, from our standpoint, evil. And we're not experts. We're not, like, experts on the discussion and the handling of sexual assault and rape and all that in a story. I'm sure that there's plenty of other Star Trek podcasts in which there are people that talk about that and they could describe how this works or not. But from a standpoint of just as us, as people, as viewers, as just ourselves, this is what we get from it. And the show has enough from our standpoint that this is what we're supposed to get from it.
We just love it because we were able to see a sort of role reversal with a man admitting, you know, to a woman that he had been sexually abused,
right,
and yes, needing that comfort and empathy. And we were both reveling in the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, it is. You guys are doing a lot of things that, like, you feel like should have been done a long time ago, but, like, we're finally getting around to it on Star Trek. We're finally catching up to 2017.
You know, it's something that I promise you that there are repercussions for that, and I think part of Laurel's sort of flaw, as it were, was, as like what I keep coming back to, she didn't realize exactly how much of a ramification that would have on the psychology of this identity that she found.
You were too good at your job, Laurel.
Well, you know,
too good at
struggle is real.
Laying identities over identities.
We were both reveling in the opportunity.
We're
to do
finally
that.
Catching up to 2017.
There are repercussions for that.
I was gonna bring up how, like, you seem very adamant that Lorca is doing this deliberately and he's had a plan from the start.
Oh, yeah, you want to talk about Lorca's secret, I want to go home plan?
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't see it so much as that. Like, I don't see that as him being so straightforward about it. I see him more as being opportunistic. Like, I think
once he found out about the Mycelial Network... Or, like, once he found out about his spore jumping technique, he was like, that's it. And that was before the show started.
Yeah.
Like, before the Discovery plot started.
Yeah, before that happened. Before we join up with that crew.
Yeah.
That I see him more as being opportunistic in the way of, like, I do agree that he would have pursued this is an assignment.
Yeah.
Because we accept that at that point it's the Mirrorverse version of him. Hopefully we'll get some more clarification on the timeline of that in the next couple of episodes.
But yeah.
Who knows? Not holding my breath for that. but I think that he would have stayed longer if Stamets hadn't said, I'll only do one more jump.
I don't think so. Because he knows once he goes back that they're going to take away his position because Admiral Cornwell's back. And he has that reaction of, we're going to give you this medal. And he goes, like, he knows that they're going to remove him.
He senses a trap. Yeah.
And I don't believe because Paul wants to... I think he's like, well, this was it. Like, we've got to use the jumps... We've got to use this, and this is the time. This is it. Like, opportunistic in that regard, but I think it wasn't just because of Stamets. I think because he knows that he's going to be taken away.
I don't think he had the roadmap set out as much as you were kind of talking about it. I feel like
he knew he needed a certain amount of jumps to figure out how to get back into his universe, though.
I want to get home, and I want to be able to use this. So what can I do? And I think he is
expertly manipulating Stamets in
every character throughout the series.
In particular Stamets, because convincing him to do the jumps in the first place and make it more his idea that he's accepting it and that it's in his personality and in his goals. And
he's like, playing up to the fact that Stamets is an
with you.
He plays up to the fact that Stamets is not just a scientist, but an explorer. Mm. That's what he's playing into this episode. He's like, you want to explore? This will help us explore.
This is why you said yes to being on Discovery.
Remember that plot thing that we introduced earlier on? I'm bringing it back.
I know what drives you, Lieutenant. You're not just a scientist. You're an explorer. You could have stayed in a lab on Earth, but you chose to go where no one has gone before.
Is it time for Huda? Huda, he was here, and he smiled a lot, and he frowned a lot, and he looked sad, and he got kissed, and he spoke a few lines of dialogue, and he was concerned.
Three scenes?
I think he was in more scenes, but he was sprinkled throughout the episode, and he was looking concerned, and he looked concerned, and he was concerned, and he loves Paul.
Medbay.
Engineering room.
Engineering for room, first jump with the cuff, and then they do return to that scene when that, like, they intercut scenes with the bridge, so
he is sprinkled out the whole episode.
It's three main points with the jump sequence and then the final jump.
The biggest thing that I think I learned from this episode about Hugh is, and I do not remember if this is contradicted in early episodes, but he seems stunned that Paul says out loud, I love you.
Yeah.
He reacts as an actor as if that's a surprise.
And like he hasn't said it before.
Right? But I think that's not... That wouldn't be right, though, right? I swear that they said I love you before, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think so. And we haven't... That's the first on-screen kiss as well. I'm pretty sure.
I'll take your word for it.
Because, like, they brush their teeth together, which is intimate, but they do not really touch each other at all.
Oh, my God. That would be too much. They've got a social distance. He's a doctor after all. But that's the biggest thing. And I don't even know if they were meaning to do that. It felt like, what's that conveying? Because we get it, Paul's crappy.
So I was like...
But Paul's whole thing in the Harry Mudd one was he was disappointed. He was saddened to hear that Michael's never experienced love.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you've got to be open and honest. And if he has loved Hugh this whole entire time... Wouldn't he have followed that rule of being open and honest and stating that? Because here's the thing. Paul isn't afraid to say his emotions. Quite the opposite. So like, why did Hugh react like that? Other than maybe that's just us interpreting it. I was just going to say, I think the I love you too. Maybe he's stunned in that reaction because he knows that Paul's saying it in a way like, maybe I won't come back from this. Like, maybe there's a bit of a worry, will this be the last time I hear this? Or, like...
I want these to be my last words was something that I was wondering if that was. And then the other thing I was like, oh, maybe it's just that they don't really do public affection.
Yeah.
And, as a couple, because Stamets is the way that he is, they don't want to, like, publicize their relationship.
Except for when they wavered about all the fucking time. Which is great, but I wish we got more of it. I want to see them on dates. I want to see them kiss. I want to see them in bed. I want to see them bicker. I
want to
see them eat food together.
I want them to be an actual couple. I don't want them to say that they're together. I want to see them just being.
If you're going to have
not because something needs to happen... But just because it's important that we get to see them living their lives and being themselves. Because that teeth brushing scene.
Which everyone hangs the whole entire relationship on.
Yeah. Like, they are... So it's indicating that they're living together. They don't touch each other and they don't...
They wear matching pajamas.
I love you. They say, we assume that the whole crew is wearing matching pajamas.
Oh, you're right.
Discovery's
every...
like
well,
that.
No, we know Michael and Tilly don't wear those pajamas. Because they don't wear the red pajamas with little
no.
badges on them. Ah.
They wear a different one, though. It's
because they're girls.
They're not officers.
You're right. Fuck. How could I forget?
We need to root in his pajamas.
Well, we know Lorca don't wear nothing but boxer shorts.
Oh, yeah.
As you likey. Mm-hmm. One of the things I wanted to say to you is... this is weird, but we've talked about sex in this episode
yes.
and in the show. So you're a Star Trek... okay, you're in charge of Star Trek, okay? Mm-hmm. And I say to you as a exec, okay, you're allowed one sex scene in your show. Now, mm-hmm. you can only choose between two options. An intense...
evil CBS.
Intense rape scene? A scene presented initially as a rape.
Yes.
Or,
but I get to reuse that footage, don't I?
Or you could have a tender love scene between two characters who are in love. Maybe Paul and Hugh, they're in a long-term relationship. Or Michael and Ash, whatever. You can have one of those two. You're Star Trek, by the way. So which one should you choose? The intense... non-rape that is actually rape but it's actually not, or an opportunity to show two characters in love. Which one do you go with?
If I was me, I would have picked the love scene.
Wrong. You should have chosen Klingon titties, because all the little boys and girls have wanted Klingon titties since
Ryan,
the age
Ryan,
of time.
Ryan.
Nobody wants to see two adult males having a tender love scene and reinforce that the fact that they are physically tender and they do love each other. What all the little boys and girls and all the adult men and women want is giant Klingon nipples and titties, because ever since Lursa, ever since Bator showed their boob windows, it's been an opportunity. Since the dawn of time that we could see Klingon titties. Now, next season, Star Trek Discovery Season 3, they can be bold enough to give us Ferengi titties. It was always hinted at, but we never saw a nipple. Do they have more than one on each breast? Are they in fact gilled? Who knows? Season 3, present us the Ferengi titties. Hashtag Ferengi titties.
It's a female!
We learned that Hugh is loves opera. We already knew that, but we got reinforced that.
Yeah.
He looks mournful. He says a bunch of techno babble, medical babble.
He
but
actually...
you know what he does do? He tries to stop it by saying, Captain, we can't do this. And then the captain says, yeah, we can. Just do it. And then he goes, you're right. And then he injects him. And then he never, ever objects ever again.
You have the power to actually stop this.
He's a terrible doctor. I still find it bizarre of a choice that Hugh does not perform tests on Paul ever to make sure of his condition, because apparently this is the first time he's had to go in and do it, it feels like.
Yes.
And a basic test showed that he was fucked up, and Hugh was treating it like, how could you betray me, bitch? How are you not doing your fucking job, Hugh? That's like your literal job. You're like, I'm sorry, what? There's a crew member, your partner, who has genetically altered themselves to a state that no other human being has ever done before, and you're like, that one test 3 months ago did it.
So he hasn't done those basic tests.
He has put metal things on his arms, though.
Yeah,
that's what he's done. He hasn't done basic tests.
He made those things, but there's no ongoing monitoring of him through tests and med
bay. Wouldn't you monitor him every single time after
every
he's
single,
done a
every
jump?
Every single jump. A med officer should be in that engineering bay. He should have been wearing the cuff the whole time to monitor, not only to make sure that he's so okay, but to measure the changes that happen to his body during the jump. Actually seeing what impact going through the mycelial network has on his physical body would be important for a scientific vessel to do.
But we need to set up this conflict between the two of them that isn't a conflict because Hugh forgives him and he doesn't care. But we have to set up this thing of Paul doesn't want to get a test because he knows that Hugh will find out and Hugh will be very disappointed. And then
when
Hugh dies, Paul will be forever mournful because they had a bittersweet ending in which he was upset with Paul about having lied, but actually not really, because he forgives him very quickly and he loves him and he just cares and he smiles and nods, and that's kind of it. The other thing that we... Can we wrap up, Hugh, with just this one piece of trivia knowledge I learned? Dr. Kolber can clean you up nicely. That was a piece of trivia we learned is, well, Michael, you've cleaned up pretty nice. And she just says, Dr. Kolber.
Well, it's good that we know that.
But we know now that from Michael, he can do that.
Looks like you cleaned up nicely.
Dr. Kolber.
Can you tell us what next episode is going to be? Because I'm very keen. Is this where we get to be in the Mirror Mirror universe? I can't wait for more. Do we get Empress Georgiou next episode? I can't wait for her. AI sausage, orange, really? Actually, in my universe, you're pansexual.
No, just no.
I can't wait.
Okay, so episode 10.
Season 1.
Despite yourself. That's what they're going with. Okay.
It'll be a quote in the episode.
Yeah.
Now, what's the description for this bad boy? Or girl, or other?
Mm-hmm. While in the unfamiliar territory, the USS Discovery crew is forced to get creative in their next efforts to survive opposing and unprecedented forces and return home.
They won't. So
Michael says everybody gets to go home, so everybody is gonna get to go home.
Except for Georgia, she gets removed from her home, but... That's a story for another time, as Star Wars once said.
Yeah.
At the end of last episode, I asked you who was like the most like hot fuckable character in this in this show or in general. Who in this series in this season of season 1, who's the least fuckable? I know, it's a tough choice. You have so many to choose from. I mean, I don't know.
I might go with the option that is possibly speciest.
You're saying Saru, are you?
Arium.
I said character. Fuck, Rachel. I mean, if we're going to pull that one out, I'm gonna pull out the one who's like the one with the big robot head from the first episode that went beep, boop, beep. Like, she doesn't even have a mouth. At least Arium has a mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah. Least
Are
fuckable.
Are you accepting my answer?
I'm accepting it. My least fuckable is the tardigrade. I just don't want to get ripped, you know? Just don't want to get ripped. I mean, I want to get ripped like fit. But I don't want to get ripped with claws. That's probably my answer. So for you people still listening out there, you could find us...
It is more of a character than Robot Lady.
I was right. They, you know, Robot Lady, boop beep. Listening out there, you people, we are on the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We have a Reddit. Just look up Yum Yum Pod for all of those and you shall find us, or Yum Yum Podcast. Feel free to rate and review us on all the podcatchers available. Give us a 5-star review for how much Rachel laughs in the background while I try and do these things. It will be a lot. We also have a Patreon where we have special bonus things in which we talk further about our thoughts on other episodes of Star Trek from other series. We talk about the movies. We talk about other TV shows as well, our just general thoughts. So if you want to hear us talk about, say, something like, I don't know, maybe Doctor Who or Babylon 5 or other sci-fi shows or just other shows in general, we have our Patreon, Yum Yum Podcast. All of these things will be in the link in the description, all these links and addresses, all that in the description. And if you want to email us with your thoughts, your concerns, and your views of what we've said or of Star Trek Discovery, email us at yumyumpod@gmail.com. yumyumpod@gmail.com. Rachel, do you want to leave us on any wise words of yum yum wisdom?
Can I switch my answer to somebody fucking the tonic right now?
You want to switch the whole thing to who would fuck the tardigrade? Is that it? Good question. Who would fuck the tardigrade? Who's your answer? Is this what you were saying?
No. I mean, like, can I switch? You like, I could get one sex scene. Can I get somebody fucking the tardigrade?
Okay, who would fuck the tardigrade? My answer is Landry. She got fucked up by the tardigrade, so she should be able to fuck the tardigrade. Maybe the evil version of Landry.
Evil version of Landry.
Fucking Ripper.
Pegging.
Pegging. That's exactly where I was gonna go. We're on the same page on this one, Rachel. So until...
We're in tune, baby. We're in tune.
So until next time, remember, pegging. Yum, yum.